You are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
Hey, welcome once again to Off Planet TV. I'm Randy Moggins. Emily Moyer is with me. And what we're going to do tonight will hopefully help you to wrap your mind around some concepts that sometimes get kind of swirled in the mix. There's so many voices out there right now that are communicating really great information. And we all have our own modalities of how we like to present things. I'd like to think our guest tonight is going to give us a splash of color, a little bit of sound, and a sense that we can wrap our heads around where we're at in time and the metaphysics behind consciousness. And Emily's going to kind of bring you up to speed here on who she is. And hey, Em, how you doing?
Good. How are
welcome,
you?
Glad to be welcome, back. Welcome, welcome,
welcome. Yep. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to be with you. All right. So I have a little bit of a lengthy intro, so I'm going to read it. I hate doing that when we're on camera, but all right. Our guest has been on the periphery of my awareness for quite some time now, as her program, Birth of a New Dimension, Flying Rainbow Lasagna, has been popping up in my YouTube feed for years. In my cynicism, and without ever listening in, I somehow decided that it must be some kind of gay version of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. But while I found it humorous, I totally blew it off. Silly me. She came direct for us a few weeks back when someone mentioned her in the comment section of one of Randy's ingenious posts. Since he is more wise than I, his next post asked the question, what the heck is a flying rainbow lasagna? Our guest immediately chimed in and offered an explanation that kind of blew us away. I spent some time looking into her, and over the last week, I have had the tremendous pleasure of getting to know her and discovering that not only is what she's doing the farthest thing from silly, but that she's actually exactly the person we've long been looking to talk to. The reality she describes is one that I have been experiencing internally for many years, but haven't, as much as I've tried, been able to describe with anywhere near the detail and eloquence that she does. She is a visionary artist who's developed the Flying Rainbow Lasagna as a way to help people understand the metaphysics of their genetics and learn to use this genetic dance to gain new levels of freedom. She's here to drop some serious knowledge and have fun doing it. Aurora, welcome to Off Planet TV.
Thank you so much, Emily, and thank you. Thank you for that beautiful introduction and description of my work.
That's awesome.
I really appreciate that. And I would like to start by saying that, yes, the term flying rainbow lasagna is a relatively lighthearted term for something that is actually a very profound concept. And that is, this is all intentional. So, and I'll also do a little bit of an explanation of who I am, just as backstory so that you can understand the provenance or why this, how my experience relates to flying rainbow lasagna. So I am not the original inhabitant of this physical body. I've used the descriptive term walk-in. I describe myself as a galactic walk-in or a galactic abstraction is the best way to say who and what I am. So about 16 years ago in 2001, the previous occupant of this body and the previous ego structure was destroyed. And we can get into what, why that happened or what was going on. But the relevance to this story right now is that I, as a non-physical abstraction, vibrated the DNA structure of this physical human body by creating the flying rainbow lasagna from what is ordinarily the toroidal or donut-shaped energy field and genetic structure of this body. So this little sculpture that I have over here, this is a torus or a donut, and it's actually two tori or two donuts, one that is at 90 degree angles like this and one that is at 90 degree angles like this, and that this is the basic structure of our time body. And I'll also go into this, the idea that our DNA is not merely, it's not just a flat, non-moving structure. It's a vibrating structure inside of us. And what it does is not just describe the protein of our physical nature, like what color are your eyes, what color is your hair, how long are your fingertips, but it also is the integument that ties us together from moment to moment, from train car, I like to joke, the train cars of reality. If we think of a timeline as being comprised of slices of time, that each moment of time is tied together by the genetic integument of, here, I'll put that down so I can gesture for you, the dance that inside of the nuclei of all of our cells, your DNA, instead of being tightly coiled or knitted together like a sweater, is unfurled like a giant vibrating loop, like a string, like this is my electric piano over here. It's making a note. If I had a physical piano, it would be a long vibrating string that when we stimulate it, it makes that sound. So our DNA is constantly doing this dance that makes a vibration and makes a sound, and that dance is what ties us together from moment to moment through reality. And I'm going to, I'm very lucky that Emily and Randy are allowing me to take control of the screen. I'm going to go into the whiteboard because I am really so much more focused in being, expressing myself through visual diagrams and other things like that. I've worked hard to be articulate with my words. I like to joke the flapping of my moving mouth parts, but I am really coming much more. It's so inefficient. It's all of this, lots and lots of words to describe what would be so much easier if we could just return to our true telepathic state.
Yes,
and be
absolutely
bypass all of this. Randy's with me. I like to say that our operating system, our human operating system, is a hacked system. And that language is like an app that we're running. And it's like a virus, that this is not the original format for our DNA, and that this way of communicating is not our original format for communicating. And all of this goes back to why invent the flying rainbow lasagna, because backstory is about 10 or 20,000 years ago, the human genetic code, or the people who occupied planet Earth, Earthlings, we lived in a different format. We were able to be not only purely telepathic, but we were able to use this aperture or this aspect of our non-physical anatomy to connect directly to the sun, the stellar network, far distant consciousnesses or civilizations, and to not have to eat physical food. That physical food and chloroplasts right now are an intermediary that we are forced to use because we don't have access to our higher faculties. And all of that is because of the genetic degradation. And all of this, I'm giving you backstory so that you can understand the flying rainbow lasagna as the tool to now be able to rearrange or reweave our collective genetic code, not only into what it once was, but into an even better format. So if you say your genetic code right now, if it's arbitrary, if it's like, say it's like the phone book, an arbitrary collection of letters and numbers and all mixed up together, but that if we took a pencil with an eraser, we could erase out the things from the code that we do not wish to be there and write in the things that we do wish to be there. So some of the things that we can erase out of the genetic code, we can erase out disease, certainly genetic diseases like cancer, but we can also erase out the idea of disease. We can erase out the idea of not just chronologically moving through time, but aging, like degradation of your decrepitude in your body and eventual death. So if it's okay, I'm going to pull up the whiteboard and draw for you a flat simplification of the lower quadrant of this sculpture. So we can all see this is a three-dimensional object, but really, in reality, this object is not merely three-dimensional, it's multidimensional. It's alive and it's moving, but we're understanding it in simplification form. And if I were to draw the lower quadrant of that, just go into the whiteboard here. Thank you for letting me do this. Just calling up also a color that we can see properly. So I use this as a type of shorthand. You can see I'm drawing what is shaped like a vortex structure, but this is simplified and exaggerated, and that represents the lower quadrant of this yellow sculpture. I'm holding it up again, and I'm also going to make a big, giant, exaggerated purple dot up here, and that is the source and the destination, or the zeroth dimension, and it is also infinity. So I'm making the infinity sign up there. And the basic idea is that we are meant to be, as consciousnesses, emanated from that point of infinity. And this, where I'm pointing this arrow to, that is the zeroth dimension because it contains everything. It contains all information, all energy, all consciousnesses, all possibilities, and all probabilities are all overlapping there at the same time. It is the central convergence point of this sculpture. When we go back to my face, I'll tell you more about the central convergence point. But we are supposed to be emanated from that convergence point on a bridge of love out here into the physical reality, assemble, you know, here, if we were to say that this line that I'm highlighting in purple, that's like the beginning of the race, and then move upward moment by moment through time and eventually reconnect with that source. That's the original format for our bodies. But that's not what's been happening since the genetic degradation. Here's what I'm going to draw, this pathway in red that I'm now drawing. We are emanated out into the physical realm. We assemble here at birth, and then we die almost instantaneously. This membrane that I'm highlighting right now, that is what I define as the membrane of death. And it's not just on this side, it's also on the other side. That is the realm between realms, or like the interstice between worlds. And when you hit that membrane, it is like a flowing waterfall that unmakes you, and then you must reassemble back at the beginning over here and try again. And on the second try, maybe you live for an hour, and then a pathogen, or you get dropped on your head, or something happens that makes you have to circulate back at the beginning and try again. And I call this the endless iterations, much like that brilliant and comedic movie Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray, where he had to cycle endlessly within one 24-hour period before he was able to get out of it. Humanity, since the genetic degradation, has had to cycle through every single possible iteration, and it's on both sides of this little sculpture structure, until you finally fill up the entire time field and make it to, here, now I'll go back to that purple color, this central core timeline, where you're then able to reconnect with the source that emanated you. And you can also see, and I'll highlight in black, this gap here, that is like the wormhole, that is the exit to how you, as to how you, one, exits this level of reality. So what I'm trying to portray, here we go back to my face, what I'm trying to portray with that simplified diagram is the idea that this is this non-physical structure of time, and this non-physical structure of time surrounds and interpenetrates our physical structure. And I'll bring up a picture here. First, I want you to look at the negative space in this structure. See these lobes, 1, 2, 3, 4. So if I bring up a picture from one of my art pieces, then I dive into the photos here, and I'm probably making squinty faces while I scroll. You must forgive me. Here we go. Here's a good image of the basic. Well, here, let me do this. This is a simplified structure. You can see the physical human form in there. You're highlighting in red. Here's this person in profile facing to the left. And then you can see all of these other, just using red to highlight. These are all of the, chakra just means a spinning wheel. It comes from ancient Sanskrit. These are all of the energy centers that surround and interpenetrate the physical structure of the body. And I won't bore you, because this is probably backstory or very familiar territory for most of the people that are already, tuned in and watching this, that each color represents a different layer of reality, with red beginning at the base of the spine down here and being the physical layer. And I'm just going to super fast go through, but not change the color of my pen, that orange is the level of mammalian human emotion. Yellow is the level of the human operating system, that hacked human operating system that I describe. And when I say it's hacked, it is like Windows 10. Windows 10, you buy it from Microsoft and you put it in your own computer. And that means that Microsoft now has access to all of your thoughts and your emails and everything that you're doing.
Yep.
So this hacked human operating system was not invented or created by humanity. It was created by the occupiers on the interstices, the overlords, what some people call the archons, A-R-C-H-O-N-S, archons, these beings that have been trapping humanity for so very long. Those for a long time, that's been the definition of what humanity is. Physical body with some mammalian emotions and a thin smear of human context on top of that, like the bumpy convoluted surface of your physical brain, and that's what humans were defined as. But there's this whole higher faculties that are level of the heart and up. So I'm making a big yellow blob there. That's your heart. It is unconditional love. This is not to be confused with romantic love. Unconditional love is like it is a tone, literally. Here's an A. It's a tone. It is a tone that we make when we move through time at the right rate. So when we move through time at 1 second per second, we make this unconditional love tone. And it means that we are not clinging to the experiences of the past or reaching forward in anxiety in anticipation of the future. And that forms a foundation like a spinning or whirling vortex of energy upon which all of these other higher faculties rest. This is just like a gears of a mechanism or a pyramid. You have truth, which is at the level of the throat. You have the brow, which is at the level of up here, up above your brow. It's also associated with Christ consciousness, but not the Christian religion. And I'll get into that. And then you have your the violet chakra that connects you to higher consciousness. So let me first do this. Christ consciousness is not only for people that are involved in what is defined as the Christian religion on Earth's surface right now. And we can go into maybe in the second hour this idea that Earth's religions are really control systems, that they are a long con, a confidence game that was programmed into the genetic code a long time ago at the moment of genetic degradation. Another person who's very perceptive has described this as planetary-wide Stockholm syndrome, that we once had these activated higher faculties, an invader rapist came in, raped our entire planet, took away our higher faculties, and programmed into humanity the tendency to worship our rapist as a deity. And this is not the real, true
that's
deity.
That's awesome.
You know
yeah.
it, man.
Yeah,
you
that's
know
it.
It.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's beautiful that Randy and Emily, we are laughing at this in our emotional response. You know, four years ago, I was doing these classes as lessons for full spectrum humans, and I would wait and I would make sure that the information did not leave the classroom and it was only for people in that class, so that I wanted to make sure everyone wasn't going to freak out. Like, right, we're laughing when we say this, that our rapist demiurge has been loved and treated as a divine being on this planet, but that is enough to send some people over the edge emotionally. So I was always very cautious about how I presented this information, and I made sure that it was almost like people would be emotionally prepared and I wouldn't be sweeping the rug out from underneath them. That was 4 years ago. So in terms of cultural development, human culture now is much more prepared and ready to accept these ideas and not to have just a lot of emotional perturbation.
Well, I think we laugh because for us, it's kind of like the car accident you walk away from and you look back at it. And the only response you have at that point is, wow, I really dodged a big one there. So that's kind of the attitude we have here. Yeah.
Yes. And I would say the idea of dodging a bullet, that is very big, because it is like we are all fighting for not only our lives, but the sovereignty of our own trajectory. Which timeline are we going to be experiencing in this time field? Are we going to experience those core possibilities? Like, imagine this is who you really are as a person, and that's you going upward towards that convergence point. Or are we going to experience who we are in distortion, like askew, you know, pushed over to the side, which is what these genetic invaders did so very long ago. And we each get to make an individual choice. That's what I'm big on this. So, and I'll get into a little bit the value system of, you know, where I come from, that Flying Rainbow Lasagna is open source code for your DNA. So you get to make a choice now. And this is also, you know, I said I'm a galactic walk-in. I'm a galactic abstraction here in this body. I'm not like some kind of interdimensional carpetbagger that said, oh, look, a bunch of vulnerable human earthlings. I'm going to go down there and totally take over and oppress them. It's not like that at all. It is much more the understanding that when we are submerged here in time, when we have a physical body, I like to say that it is like you have an instrument. We are submerged in the symphony of life. In order to be alive, what we define as alive, what science defines as alive, you know, having a physical metabolism, having eating and excreting, responding to stimuli, that being able to reproduce, that in order to be in this format of being alive, we need to conform to certain patterns. And those are the patterns that I was getting into at showing you those chakra shapes. Those patterns are like music. Music is organized sound waves. So when we are living according to these organized time waves, then we're making beautiful music. If we don't live according to those organized time waves, get ready, this is going to sound bad. We make ugly sounds, and that is called noise, not music. So the idea is we were never invented to hit this membrane of death. We were not invented by the original great musical composer that created the Symphony of Life. We were not invented to ever have to hit this membrane of death. We were invented to only be emanated from that convergence point and return back to that convergence point. So I'm going to talk about this a little bit more. This is the zeroth dimension. Zero because it takes zero amount of information to describe the position of anything there. I know a lot of this is math talk, but stick with me on this. Like the first dimension is a line. So we have to have one piece of information to say, where is a point on a line? But in order to describe the position of something at the zeroth dimension, we don't have to give any information. If you think of it like a house, you can address every single piece of mail to the zeroth dimension. It will get there. Everybody lives at this address. It's infinity. It's the presence of all information. It's the it's the singularity, but let's be cautious here. It's not the transhumanist singularity. It's not that definition of the singularity. It's closer to the singularity as defined by science, where it talks about this stretching of the fabric of space and time, putting an infinitely heavy bowling ball on that fabric and stretching it down, down, down to a point. So it's similar to that. The place where all of those laws of physics break down because we have stretched that fabric to an infinite level. So we could also think about it as a room in a house. Infinity is a room in a house that has a million, billion, uncountable number of doorways that enter into that house. And embodying this profound truth is what allows us to create the flying rainbow lasagna and transcend these levels of limitation. Because this singularity, by definition, must be single. There can only be one of it. So if we have two of it, it becomes a duality or a multiplicity. The idea is that there is only one of it, and that in this shape, energy is constantly circulating around. If you're familiar with vortex-based math or a Rodin coil, this is the place where all of the wires cross. And that the Rodin coil and the work of Marco Rodin, this is very worthwhile and worth looking into, because that is the physical expression of what is happening here in the non-physical energy body and all of the anomalies that happen in terms of over energy, getting more energy out of the system than you place into the system is because of the magic.
Over unity.
That's exactly the word over I was looking for. Exactly. Yeah. So when we take that singularity and move it back and forth very fast, we get this shape. This is the singularity, this purple point. It is ordinarily this convergence point in here. So this is math talk now. When we add an additional dimension, we get an additional degree of freedom. So if I talk about the second dimension, it's like the flat plane of my hand. This is, it's a flat plane because it requires two pieces of information to describe where is a point on this line, an X and a Y. We take this flat plane, and if we fold it, then I can make these two edges meet. I don't have to have a little ant all the way across. You're laughing in anticipation.
No, this is an exciting concept because I've used this example for years about describing dimensional and time enfoldment and also travel itself. And basically said, the simplest analogy is fold a taco in half. At the two edges is where you traverse. Yeah, so you...
Perfect analogy. And that's the whole idea. I say that we are just like that little ant stuck to a flat leaf that can't just fly to the edge of the leaf. We are stuck to the surface of time, and we cannot go directly from breakfast to dinner. We have to go across the entire surface of the day unless we can fold time and space. So let's say we wanted to speak to a far distant star civilization that was billions of light years away. If we sent out a physical light beam or something that had to travel in a linear sense, by the time our query, hello, how you doing, reached them, their civilization would be dead. Or by the time they reflected their answer back to us, our civilization would be dead. So in order to become sophisticated communicators in this galactic network of consciousnesses, we have to begin to learn how to fold time, space, and consciousness so that we don't have these extremely long time lags. I want to get into genetic changes, but first I'll talk a little bit about the inside and the outside becoming communicative. So this flying rainbow lasagna. Okay, this is the whole idea. I invented this shape. I'm the inventor and the creator, but I don't hold it as a proprietary shape. It's something that I wish to be shared as widely as possible with everyone. That's why I like to joke that this is like open source code for your DNA. So the open source movement, this is where they say, you know, we're going to write this program, but I'm not going to make you pay me $1 million to use it. Take the program, use it, collaborate on it, and include me in your future collaborations. That is what I am encouraging humanity to do on a planetary level. And I'm pointing at this painting that I've got in my background over here. I'll describe it for the audio only listeners, that this painting is called Birth of the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, and it depicts Earth's ordinarily toroidal or toroid donut-shaped magnetosphere. Magnetosphere is the protective magnetic envelope that surrounds and interpenetrates Earth and creates the phenomenon known as the aurora borealis in Australia. That magnetosphere is splitting apart and it is transforming into a flying rainbow lasagna shape. So first of all, this is how I perceive what we are presently experiencing as pole shift. That I can also go speak to the trauma, the collective trauma that we all are working through from the time of the fall in Atlantis, that was a great crisis, a catastrophe. It was a genetic traumatic event that harmed all of us. And just like if you have a rape or a car accident or something that really harms you, it creates an imprint and then you have a negative expectation that it will simply be repeated again. So there are a lot of people that have the expectation that we are going to experience a similar trauma of pole shift north to south or south to north. But I'm here to tell you, I envision it more as a turning inside out, that there are mathematical ways, like how do you turn a sphere inside out without cutting the actual physical membrane of the sphere. And this is the challenge. The membrane itself is time. And I'm not a scientist, but I use these descriptive terms in order to relate to this world that is a world of science and objective materialism. The idea of science's description of the Big Bang as emanating outward that super dense, super condensed core of energy that explodes outward and expands and creates the bubble of time. And science describes us as being inhabitants of the surface of this bubble. And the interior of the bubble is the past. Science doesn't even recognize the future of the bubble. Anything outside of, you know, my hand, anything outside of there, science wouldn't even recognize. And the whole idea is we can't cut that bubble. You can't have the past and the future communicate because they are separated by that membrane of the surface. Well, the flying rainbow lasagna is a tool that is used to make membranes permeable. I wanted to say to render them moot, but let's just say to make membranes permeable so that it's like now you don't have this thing that separates thing from thing. You have a thing that allows these two things to communicate. This is the resolution of duality. Duality is programmed into us on a biological profound level. So I'm a newcomer to this biological form. When I first came into this body, I was very aware of how even the eyesight apparatus, we have two eyes, binocular vision, and the way that we perceive the three-dimensional world around us is by making instantaneous, minute, very fast calculations, I1 versus I2, and our system of perception, our mind, our brain makes these instantaneous calculations and is able to tell how far away are things in space. So we have eye versus eye, and even in the retina of our eye, we have cells that perceive according to contrast. So we look at light versus dark, trying to bring across the idea of duality. Duality is programmed into us, even the sense of having an epidermis. If we were beings that had a body that was made of cloud, instead of a physical body with a physical boundary called the epidermis, we would have a different sense of our relationship to our context than we presently do. So we are given this narrative fiction, usually in early childhood or infancy, the narrative fiction of the ego, the boundary, the membrane that separates self from context. Because the truth is, we are submerged within a sea of energy. There is no separation between you or myself as an individual and the world in which we find ourselves. Like I like to joke when I'm sitting out in my garden with my shoes, without my shoes on, I have 50 different types of fungus that grow on my big toe. And all of those fungi, this is not just me, everybody has 50 fungi on your big toe. And you have 90 fungi on your heels. This is a scientific study was done to determine this. But those little yeasts and microorganisms, they are interacting with the yeasts and microorganisms on Earth's surface. There is literally a seamless integration between yourself as an individual and everything that you are and the planet upon which you stand. So it's a fiction. We are programmed in with this fictional idea that you're not really the totality. You're not the everythingness. You're this one little encapsulated person, and you're defined by the boundaries of your epidermis, and you're only responsible for what is inside of your boundaries, you know, the interior world. You only have to metabolize for what is inside of you. But that's not actually truthful. Although it was beneficial when humanity went from levels of superstition to levels of objective materialism, like around what is called, you know, the age of reason, the age of enlightenment, with Newton and Newtonian physics and the idea of just using our five senses to observe the physical world around us and basing our laws on that, quantum physics came by later and was able to give humanity a greater level of sophistication that actually said observership affects reality. And when that happened, we began to understand that what we are doing inside of our epidermis is actually affecting the world outside of our epidermis. So here, let me just drink a little bit of water and then I'll get into the flying rainbow lasagna.
All right.
Because this is the tool that we can use to vibrate any of these membranes that are like a boundary in order to show, and sorry, in order to render that boundary moot, or in order to make things communicate across that boundary. So if we say this red level, this red layer here is any boundary, it could be the narrative fiction of your ego, and your ego is your sense of self, your name. My name is Joe Smith, and I live at this address, and this is my favorite sweater, and this is my dog, Harry, and this is how I define myself. But we understand those are temporal personality characteristics. Those are not the universal or core personality characteristics. I would define those as, when I use this pen in alignment, that's like your core personality. That's who you are in the very basic nature of the narrative structure of, you know, the great scriptwriter writing your personality characteristics. And if we were to look at it from the top down, we'd see it like a bullseye. You are that bullseye going directly into the middle. You are not all of the periphery, okay? So the idea is that the flying rainbow lasagna is what happens when we make that convergence point. I'll just make sure you know what I'm talking about. This place in the middle, where zeroth dimension, where everything comes from and everything goes to. When we make that zeroth dimension jump back and forth across the membrane. So now I'm making my white pen jump from this side of the membrane to this side and back to this side and back to this side. What we're doing is taking that formerly interior little dot and making it jump outside of the membrane and then making it jump back in. This is, hopefully you can envision how, and I can draw it also as a picture.
This is actually very quantum concept, much like electrons that leap over a barrier. Yeah.
You're totally getting it.
And I, of course, have no trouble visualizing all of this.
No. We actually do this.
When I do these, when I speak with my flapping, moving mouth parts, I want you to know I'm also sending out concurrently a telepathic broadcast for everyone who can pick up the visualizations. Like, I know what you're talking about, Emily, that as I'm speaking, there is also a movie that is being played to talk about all this.
Yeah.
Let's also, I'll do a little bit of whiteboard drawing because Randy brought up the idea. Here, bring up the pen. If we bring up the idea here, in an atom, if that's the nucleus of an atom, and then this is one electron shell, one level of excitation, and then this is another electron shell, and now I'm going to make a little red electron. This is the X, this is a little red electron. In order for that red electron to jump to the next level of excitation and live there, what it has to do is save energy in its energy banks. It can't do a halfway leap. It can't go like, first I'm going to go here and then hang out here for a little while and then go all the way over to here. It has to make one full leap, one big giant leap.
Yes.
And this is what we mean when we describe quantum leap, that it's not, this is not just cool catchphrases, that we're really talking about something. And that quantum leap that we are doing it as individuals and as a planetary whole, as a collective. I keep pointing to this depiction of the planet splitting apart, that we're making that jump from this context or this paradigm or this narrative structure into a new narrative structure. So we're jumping from the level of reality where we describe ourselves as objective materialists, where if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. This is a lie. This is like an old, right? Like I'm a newcomer. I'm a fish out of water. When I first heard that expression, I was like, what does that mean? What are they even talking about? And then I came to understand that it meant, oh, this means the basic devaluing of imagination and wishing. the idea that wishes are worthless, that you can't actually affect reality with your passions and dreams and desires, but that is not truthful. We are intimately connected to reality, just like my big toe through the microorganisms on my big toe. We're intimately connected to the planet. So the planet has a dream. The higher consciousness that we are connected to, like from our crown chakra up to less dense reality, higher dimensional, less dense reality, that reality has a dream, and we are not bifurcated or separated from that dream, that we're here to express it in a seamless continuum. That is what happens when we do the flying rainbow lasagna. So flying rainbow lasagna, it's not just an intellectual concept. It is also a verb, and it's a verb that we can do with our energy field, with our time, our little tendrils of time that dance and connect train car of reality to train car of reality. And it is a dance that we can do with our minds. It's a dance that we can do with our DNA. So I have pictures, because pictures worth a thousand words, and the idea that we have to get into super coiling, because at the level of inside of our DNA, our chromosomes at a certain point are super coiled into the structure of a torus. And the idea is, any place where you have a torus or a donut shape, you can add an additional degree of freedom by adding another dimension. And we do that by putting this into a context. So I'll draw what does it mean to place that into a context? I'll go on the whiteboard here. If this is the simplification of that yellow sculpture, like a cross-section simplification of what I was holding up there. And let's say that the area that I'm highlighting in black right now is vacuum. This is nothing. There's nothing around here. And I describe science doesn't even recognize the future. Like, the future would be considered the fifth dimension and higher, a place of uncollapsed waveforms.
Yeah. Science has officially decided there is no future.
Yes. Yes. And that is crippling. Like, that means you cannot navigate. And science also would say that being able to perceive the future then would be superhuman or impossible or not according to their limitations.
Right.
But we were all born and designed to have these higher faculties that allow us to see the future, like having a windscreen on your car. So you're driving down the street and you can actually see where you're going. Yeah. It is ridiculous to think that we would have a great musical composer, creator that would create these instruments for us that we couldn't actually see where we were going. So in order...
It really is. It's funny how they do that, science, this, you know, whatever is controlling science right now. And science has really, in my opinion, become religion. It's become dogmatic. And it's this control system, exactly like, you know, Catholicism or Christianity or Islam or whatever. And it's, you need to go through this to connect with anything above you, and you don't get to see that, and you can't create that as you go along. There's this membrane right there, and that's it. Science, Islam, Christianity, whatever, right? Scientism is what we're dealing with, yeah?
Absolutely. And that's so perceptive. And that's one of the reasons why I chose, you know, as my incarnation in this past 16 years to be an artist. I really looked around at human society. I said, I have these ideas that I would like to share with others. And I do not want to have to go through the peer review system. I don't have to have my sculptures or my paintings peer reviewed.
Yes.
And that's a big part of it. And because there's lack of acceptance of these ideas. And also I perceive these ideas through my direct vision, that this is not something that I have achieved through, let's say, mathematical calculations. So no, I don't have the 1, 2, 3 steps to lead up to this. This all came as a sudden, like that's what it is when you're a visionary. You see it all at once, and then you figure out the integument, you know, leading up to it. So figuring out, I'll go back to my face for a second before I go back to this. Figuring out the integument, that was a process that took many years. When I first got into this body, I'll just tell you a little bit about my personal story. I don't want to like miss where I was in the lasagna description. But I spent the first couple of years percolating this inside of me. I didn't understand it fully myself yet. And it took a lot of, I did endless notebooks. I drew and drew and drew these patterns. And then eventually I took the paper out of the notebooks and I folded it like origami. And that was how I figured this out. And so I'm going to do a paper folding workshop at the end of this week in order to guide people through, because you really do, you learn so much more than just, it's not an intellectual exercise. And just like if you're, when little kids are being taught how to write now, we teach them by tracing, like you trace the letter A, you trace the letter B, this is how you learn the alphabet. I learned this type of language by tracing it with my fingers, because part of the profundity, what is special about this shape is that the outside, here I'm tracing with my white pen right now, becomes the inside, and then the inside becomes the outside. And becomes
kind of like a Mobius exploded.
Yeah.
You got it, Randy. That is absolutely right. Mobius strip is very similar, and Mobius transformation, I don't know if you can see it, and I can pull a picture up, but I'm pointing right now behind me to a Mobius transformation.
Yeah, it's actually very, transformation. We can see that. Yeah.
Awesome. I'll pull up a image also very quickly.
Sure. Yeah. It's good because people watch this on YouTube and sometimes on their phones, which is horrifying because it's about the size of a postage stamp. So here we go. Oh my. Emily.
This is it.
See, Emily and I talk about this stuff all the time because both of us have seen these patterns. I've drawn them most of my life, just like randomly. You know, when
and I dance them.
And she dances them. She sees them in her head with pulses and washes of music and color.
I mean, this, like, quite literally, I mean, so you said that you didn't want to be a scientist because you didn't want to have to go through peer review. And I don't make paintings like you, but I'm a dancer. And so that's a form of artist too. So I'm a visionary artist as well. And my peer review says that you must be right, because how could it be that two people who only met each other last week for years and years and years have been seeing the same thing, playing with the same concepts, and this, what you are, these things that you are saying are exactly the inner dialogue that I've been having with myself. I've been trying to understand the mechanics of what I'm looking at, understand how it works, understand the importance of each little part that makes up this whole thing that we're looking at, try and play with it, try and flip it inside out, used it as a portal for time travel to take me to places where I can connect with myself in the past, myself in the future. And when I'm dancing and I'm there, time is gone. And the more I dance, like sometimes people will ask me, "How are you? You've been dancing for hours. How do you keep going?" The longer I do it, the more energy I seem to have. I mean, I have literally been known to dance from Saturday night till Monday morning. Not so much recently, but it doesn't, once I lock into that space, time doesn't exist. My age doesn't matter. My body feels great. And I'm going up that zero point and just looking out at all of this kaleidoscope of stuff from that place, and functioning as an over unity energy device. Like, I used to call myself a techno fusion battery, you know? So I peer review you and I say, right on.
I love your description of yourself as an over unity energy device. I think that's beautiful. I mean, that's what we're heading into when we do this genetic transformation. We're heading into this time of total regeneration. This is why we don't have to die, but we don't have to have disease. And I wanted to just confirm with you, like, this, what you're describing is so beautiful. It's, I like to say, I do landscapes. Like, these aren't just abstract paintings. They're not just decorations or patterns. They're really a landscape of an abstract realm. And like, you see it in your dance and you express it in your dance. And I also like to bring up the idea of cell specialization, that each one of us as individual humans, we are like individualized cells. So the heart has its own form of cells. The bones have their own form of cells with their own specialties. And they're all working together in this beautiful, hear the music, the symphony, all working together. So that is how I, and when we, it's like we are comparing notes. We all went to the same place. We all perceived the same landscape, and we express it differently. So for one person, it is the kinesthetic, or, you know, the body movement expression. And for one person, it might be visual. For one person, it might be like musical, auditory, or some people do a lot with overtones, singing, and these harmonic vibrations that are basically when we make sound waves that look exactly like this visual depiction here. And so we are exploring the objective reality that is a higher dimensional reality that's a incredibly, like, when the whole time you were speaking, I was like smiling broadly and giving you the huge thumbs up for anyone who's only on audio here.
It has to be a real place, a real thing, if you and I can both go there. You know what I mean? Like, it can't just, you know, like someone could say, oh, it's in your head, you're tripping or whatever. But how is it that, you know, I described it, but not, it's a place that not everybody has figured out how to get to yet. And even those of us who have, we haven't figured out how to stay there all the time. It's still a place we visit. And by doing the things we're doing right now, we're trying to work out how to make this the reality outside besides just inside, right? And so some people, when I talk to about these experiences, like, you know, because sometimes these experiences for me come in a psychedelic realm, other times not. But I talk to other people who have psychedelic experiences, and not many of them have something like this. So, you know, not that they can't learn to have them, but there's obviously, you know, through all the things that we're doing, through all of the, you know, experiences we have, through all of the memories we, like, you know, through all of the things we do that reawaken the memories of our past lives and our future selves and all this kind of stuff, we are building into the ability to first see this, then experience it and play with it, and then make it the reality. Yes?
You got it. Absolutely. When you said putting together the inside and the outside, that's what Flying Rainbow Lasagna is all about.
Yeah.
That previously we've been having this, I'm highlighting it in black, as our interior experience. But
yeah.
How amazing and magical and wonderful is it when we begin to combine this realm of what we see as other people and hard-edged objects and experienced in, you know, physical reality, and that interior realm. And to my understanding, this is like when our dreams become true. We begin to experience mm-hmm. reality as a waking, lucid dream, and we become empowered. So all of the information that I share about these, the proportions of, you know, non-physical reality or your time, body, your chakra system, and the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, these are meant to be empowering. I'm not trying to be like, let me give you another set of limitations or another control system or another set of constraints within which you have to work. I'm imagine myself like an art teacher, and like I'm holding up my little paintbrush here. If I say, this is what a paintbrush is, these are where the hairs are, these are where you put the paint, and this is how you hold it, but I'm not going to tell you what to paint with your paintbrush. But that is how I look at this. This is a way to genetically rearrange your reality, and you get to do it in your own body. So each one of us, here, I'll go back to my face so you can see it.
That place when you're doing that, because this has been my experience, and let me know if it's yours, it helps you to remember or uncover those memories deeply stored inside your genes, that like our genetic memory. And that place isn't a place where time is linear, because some of these memories are from the past and some of them are from the future. And so isn't like fully optimized, right, correctly working DNA is like your own personal time travel device.
Oh my God, that is beautiful. I'm going to draw a picture because I speak with pictures here. Here,
please do.
If we say, yeah, I love it. I love getting free reign to draw with pictures. Let's keep it here. I'm choosing the right color here. So if we say this is person, a very simplified stick figure person, and let's say that this is like their DNA dancing inside of their cells. But let's say that we can have someone in the far distant past, this is who was a person, let's say, you know, 3 million years ago. And let's say we've got this person over here in the future. And what we can do is through Flying Rainbow Lasagna, and I'll make a very simplified Flying Rainbow Lasagna shape, we can jump DNA from over here to the future over here. And let's say that this is the lasagna shape connecting these two beings through time. And we can take a little bit of interesting DNA from this person over here, and we can bring it back and we can reweave it into this person. And let's say we do the same thing going backwards in time. Maybe this is an ancient ancestor who had some secret to health or vitality or some yoga mm-hmm. or something that we can do to heal ourselves in this moment. Flying Rainbow Lasagna back to that person. Here, take their little idea or their little genetic dance movement and weave it into what we are presently doing. And I'll even go further. I won't draw the whole thing, but the idea that we can do that with far distant versions of ourselves in other star systems, that you can jump into or take energy from. I joke, I use a lot of analogies. It's like the buffet. You know, at a buffet of food, you can take a spoonful of whatever you want and put it on your plate. Well, you can fly in Rainbow Lasagna, your genes, all throughout time and history, mm-hmm. even to far distant star systems, to beings that we would not describe as human. And you can take a scoop out of their delicious buffet dish and put it on your plate, so that what's on your genetic plate right now is a little bit of everything that you need.
Yep.
And this is how we can experience profound healing. And to give you an idea of, like, if you're a science-based person, of how this can happen, in order for mammals to have a working placenta and have live birth, millions of years ago, at a certain point, a viral messenger brought the idea of how to create this certain protein into the primate genome. And science did a whole genetic exploration of how and why this happened. But I bring this up in order to give the idea that we can get tendencies, we can ingest tendencies from another organism and then apply it to our own journey. tardigrades do this also. The tardigrades, these are these tiny microscopic, they're also known as woolly bears. They're incredibly durable, like they're very hard to kill. They can live in the vacuum of space. And one of the explanations as to their durability is that they're able to desiccate themselves. And when they desiccate themselves, they get completely dried out, and their DNA, instead of being together in one long vibrating string, gets chopped up into bits. And then when they rehydrate, they don't just rearrange their genes into the original format or the original music. They take little riffs from other organisms, and they put those riffs into their original song. So they can take a riff of how to have more durable skin or how to metabolize differently or whatever they need.
So it's like when a DJ remixes someone else's track to add some funky parts into it and just some like if there's another song that like it reminds them of, they can add a little line from that song into it and whatever. So it's the ultimate sort of your personal remix of whatever your song is.
I adore your analogy. That is perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And if you don't mind, I'll bring up pictures because I have a whole series of pictures prepared for my online lessons to describe what is going on here. So here's one. Well, and here's another one. Okay. This first, and I hope, can you see this okay on your screen?
Yep.
Yeah, it looks good.
This is an actual electron scanning microscope science photograph of what supercoiled DNA is. So supercoiling is you take those two strands and we begin to twist it up like a yarn. And if you twist it up to a certain level of complexity, we get these toroidal shapes. At another level, and I'll get into that in a second, at another level of DNA replication, it is split apart, kind of like a loop. So this, here, let me get a color that you can actually see here. This area that I'm highlighting in black, that is one, like a zipper, that's one side of your DNA, and you have this other side, and the teeth are supposed to match up. They get unzipped so that the little RNA messengers can read what's going on in there. And now you can see the flying rainbow lasagna, what I'm highlighting in black in the middle. Mm-hmm. This is like a placeholder. So it's a movement, it's an oscillation that you can do at that level of your DNA. And your DNA, it's not just sitting there, it's kind of like an old-fashioned ticker tape machine. One part of it is literally like shooting out, and it's spinning around. It's not just standing there in a static way. The movement of the flying rainbow lasagna, and the flying rainbow lasagna is also an oscillation. It allows for a rearrangement. These, I'm highlighting it now, these little letters in black, those are like dance partners. And ordinarily, those dance partners are only allowed to do-si-do with their dance partners across the way.
Yeah.
But let's say that they're bored. Let's say this one over here is like, I'm bored with dancing with you. I don't want to do that. I would prefer to dance instead with this person over here. And maybe this person wants to dance with this person over here. So I liken this very much to that that movie Contact with Jodie Foster, where they're given blueprints from an extraterrestrial race. And at first they're trying to look at the blueprints as if they are, you know, flat pieces of paper sitting on a desk like that. And they're not able to effectively read the blueprints until they understand that they have to actually put them around a cube. And then when they look at the cube, they're able to effectively put the concepts together. So with the flying rainbow lasagna, with your DNA, it is the idea that you can change the arrangement of those letters and then look at them like line of sight. I'm going to hold this up. I hope it shows up in the camera. If I hold this sculpture up in just the right way, you can see how there's a crossing point of this part where my white pen is going and now this part where my white pen is going. And that crossing point, that this is like we have one strand of DNA going around one half of the zipper that is unzipped over the front and one of the zipper that is unzipped over the back. So this is one opportunity for you to rearrange your DNA. And you do that by placing it in a higher dimensional context. And I'll go, because I'm doing continuity, because I was drawing that as an image. I drew this before I got off track. I drew this, the cross section of that yellow sculpture. Okay. That is like this. I said, this is time. And that science does not even officially recognize what is outside of there. This would be the future, but science doesn't officially recognize it. What, in order to put this shape in a higher dimensional context, we have to put it in a place. And so I'm now drawing it as if we put this sculpture in a room, in a house, in a place, or something like that. And then once we do that, we can either make the sculpture jump up and down very fast, or we can hold the sculpture in one place and we can make the room itself jump up and down very fast. When we do that, we get a superposition. Half of the time, the DNA is structured up here. Half of the time, it's down here. So that means that we get an overlapping of different possible realities, just like a buffet. I can take a scoop out of that dish and a scoop out of that dish and combine them together on my plate, and then I can have both of these realities interacting on my plate. Just like saying, I'm going to take a scoop of genetic idea out of this ancient virus, and I'm going to use it in my body right now in order to be able to grow, successfully grow a placenta and have live birth, which is what primates do all the time. So this is not such an untold word concept that we are borrowing genes or borrowing new genetic dance steps from, like I said, that DJ analogy is brilliant. Okay. A mashup.
So I have a question now. I'm going to try and figure out the best way to ask it, because I just what you just went through there made me really think of something. Can you bring up that graphic you had before that had the flying rainbow lasagna from top, like the top vision over the DNA zipper thing? You just had it up a minute ago.
I'm going there right now.
All right.
I know I make funny faces when I scroll.
No squinty faces. It's always hilarious to watch yourself on camera and the faces.
I know.
Okay. So when the visionary experience starts for me, okay, I'm looking at it, kind of changes back and forth between this view of it and then the view of like the yellow Torah you have. So sometimes I'm seeing it from one angle and sometimes I'm seeing it from the other. So when it's opening up like that, and you talk about things kind of communicating back and forth here. So for me, I get like it almost looks like a cord or like a pulley or some kind of gear, and something starts spinning. The green, which is so the heart area, starts spinning and starts moving up and down it. And when it moves up to the top of to the membrane of the yellow thing you have, and then moves beyond it, another version of it forms. So a smaller version, like you have, all of your art has like this fractal, like a smaller version, a bigger version. So another
one. That's where I was going with this. I was sitting here thinking, the symmetry between everything that we're looking at here is macro, micro, down to completely submicroscopic, but yet the symmetry is always the same. It seems to be resolving into forms that are identificational. If we look at our own DNA and then we scale that out to look at the planet, scale that out to look at the galactics, and then configure time into there and understand how this all interacts, all of a sudden, identificationally, we start to understand something about us in the context of all of this, which makes us not so insignificant anymore.
Yes. So let me finish my description real fast, because I think, so when all these little parts could come, so I'm the central meat, it's this in the middle, right? And when all these new parts form, I'm looking at maybe past me's or future me's or different versions of me's, and I'm going into every one of them, and they're interacting with the central me and doing what you were saying. Like I'm picking and pulling different parts. Maybe in one life back there, I understood something about physics and metaphysics, and I viewed how I thought I was viewing it while I was dancing, but maybe I really was the person involved in building the pyramids. In other ones, I understood, you know, and other little pieces, whatever weird thoughts, because I go into some very strange worlds that make a beautiful amount of sense when I'm in them, but are hard to describe when I'm out. And I am picking and pulling little things and then reintegrating them into myself. And for some reason, the act of the movement is really helpful to both generate that field and then to pull it back, to pull the pieces back in. It's like I've put out, it's almost like you're saying, I have there, the me in the middle is there, I'm at the buffet, and then all of the little me's get laid out at the buffet, and I'm picking and choosing the cherry from this one, the pineapple from this one, I like this, but I don't like this, take this. And so what we're really trying to do right now is make the version of us that we really want to be. Right? Takes pull from all of our past us's, all of our future us's, and create that one that can ride right up the middle so we don't have to bump up against the membrane, right? And do it all over again because we missed something. How's that?
Absolutely. I didn't know if Randy had something to respond to that. I don't want to interrupt, but then I
No, actually, no. She finished my thought for me, because that's where I was going as well.
Right on.
These are concepts. You see what you're doing? Is visually right now, you're pulling together a lot of concepts that we're trying to communicate. We understand this stuff intuitively a lot of times. And as you pointed out, the language has limitations. You know, so the visuals actually help bring this all back together. The symmetry was part of it, the dimensional aspects as well. And I got nothing else to add to that.
I agree with you. Language is so hard to describe this, and I'm so visually oriented, and I think it helps us to visualize time. And what you were just describing, Emily, with the idea that if we, you can see I'm turning the sculpture
each one,
now.
Each one opens. Yep, that's exactly so it.
The and center is, yep, this is like the bullseye that we're all trying to go to in our lives. And I love your description of that being the set of characteristics. That's like the recipe of who we truly are. That when we're in this periphery, we're not even being our true selves, that there's some aspect of distortion in our behavior or thoughts, or some, like if you're supposed to be a dancer, but your arms and legs have been cut off, clearly you cannot be a dancer. So sometimes it's not that you're a bad person. It's just that in those areas, something has happened in the series of events that makes it so that you cannot be your true self.
Yeah. Wow. The other thing I'm thinking about, because when I visualize what I see when I dance and you keep moving that, is the constant transformation between seed of life, flower of life, seed of life, flower of life. Ooh. And when I see the things kind of growing off of each other, it's like that. Like there's like in between each flower of life, there's another circle that is a simpler one that is the seed of life. And it gives birth to the flower of life, which then simplifies itself back down to the seed and birth to the flower.
Let me break in for a minute. That's an awesome segue, because then I can talk about the distortions. In a lot of the present teaching about the flower of life, it's flattened out. They're not giving all of the information.
That's Yes.
If I were to give you a recipe, how to make grandmother's strudel, and I said, oh, it's just water and yeast and flour and some apples, and you just throw it together. No, the truth is there is a whole technique into how to do this properly so that you actually get strudel and not a total mess. So the idea of saying, oh, the flower of life, it's just this flat line drawn, that is not accurate at all.
It's that. So, it's alive like that, and it moves, and it, yes.
And it has a slightly different context than just the six spokes that stick out. So now I'm going to do it for you. This sculpture right here is actually made out of, we can imagine it like a cube, like one side, two side, three side, four side, five side, six side. And you can see that it's made out of these four vortexes, one, two, three, four. And then there's one implied like this. And there's also one implied like this. So where I'm putting my pen right now, this is the negative space of the sculpture. And I always have to say this, it's not negative because it's bad. It's negative, like in art school, the negative and the positive space.
Yeah.
So in a coffee cup, the negative space of the coffee cup is where the coffee goes. So this is like the place that stuff can go in this sculpture. And I created this sculpture as the complement. This is the negative. So this is the negative space of this sculpture. And you can see in a lot of my artwork, like this one that is behind me, you can see an exaggeration of those four lobes. It always looks like four lobes because that's a cross section. I'm always painting the front half of this sculpture. So we've got four lobes, one, two, three, four. But what we've really got are four more lobes. I'm holding on to four of them behind here. So we've actually got an eight-lobed shape. And now I'm going to hold it up to the camera. I hope that your audience can see this properly. I'm going to fiddle with it a little bit, but not to the point of annoying you.
No, and that's exactly, yeah. That's
you're
exactly
getting
right.
It. Good, good, good. So now I'm going to highlight with my white pen. You can see the spokes of the six-pointed spokes. One, two, three, four, five, six. And that's usually what is depicted as the flower of life.
Missing the part in the middle, which is the 0 point. Right?
This is the higher dimension that is pointing towards you or towards the camera. And look, my hand is holding on to another aspect that is pointing towards me. So that extra plane is what makes this an actual higher dimensional shape as opposed to a flat shape. And I'm going to get into the Merkabah also, because these are like two teachings that have to do with the six-pointed geometric structure limiting humanity. And this level of the brow, this is the sixth chakra, and it is the level of Christ consciousness. But remember, we have all these distortions at the level of Christianity, that the dogma of Christianity and the teachings about that have been flattening out humanity and keeping you from achieving these higher levels of aspiration and consciousness.
So what about the six-pointed star, right? Isn't that be a sub-representation of the same thing and how angular it is? The other, your geometry, sorry to interrupt, go ahead.
Not at all. While you're talking, I'm folding up my little sculptures. You can tell I have all these little sculptures that I play with. And first I'll show you this, and then I'll show you in a picture. I have, you know, a sketch all prepared. So this would be and let me see if I can hold it just right for the camera. Oh, you can't really see it.
The Merkabah is the six-pointed star.
Exactly. Right. So this is, if we imagine these are superimposed on one another and that they interpenetrate, and that the flattened out version would be that six-pointed star that we often see. So let me, I love that I can draw with pictures here. Let me pull up the picture that I'm looking for and make my squinty faces while I'm scrolling, because this is like the information as to how you get out of here. So if you don't know how to connect these lines, then all you get to do is run in place. But if we take this, so first I'll just highlight in red, you know, this is the basic, this is what most people show. And, you know, it looks just like a Israeli Star of David or something like
that. Imagine that.
I know, right? This is the hijacking of these sacred symbols. Now I'll choose a different color. If we draw the right series of lines, I connect these lines and these lines and this, what we get is an octahedron. Yep. And what I'm doing is I'm simply rearranging what is there. I'm not adding or removing energy. I'm just rearranging what is there.
We're going to wind up with a dodecahedron at some point here, aren't we?
You got it. You got it.
So of course we are, Randy. Of course we are.
I just added in two simple lines. I'm making it really fat here. This line I added in and this line I added in. So what, now let's count the faces. I just created an octahedron and then I'll show you an actual octahedral crystal in on the camera. Let's count the faces. Here's the front face, one, side face, two, other side face, three, and then there's one in the back we can't see, that's four. And then in the front, I don't know if I can draw this properly because of where the pictures are, but there's one that's down here at the bottom. My pen won't draw down there. There's one down here at the bottom, so that's one, and there's one on the side, two, I can't draw, three, four on the bottom. Sorry, I couldn't do that quite properly. So we end up having eight sides of that total sculpture. So first of all, let's start off with this. These are all of the basic sides that we're starting off with. Four and four makes eight, and each one of these is an equilateral triangle, and each one of them has its 60-degree angles up here. So this is the amazing thing that happens when we transform that star tetrahedron into an octahedron. I'm holding up this little crystal. I don't know if you could see it or if it is too blurry.
Is that a Herkimer diamond?
It's not, although I do have Herkimer diamonds, but they're not shaped like octahedrons.
Bring it more to the center of the screen. And you're up as close as you absolutely. That's good. That's perfect. Now we can see.
It's a little bit out of focus, but what I'm trying to do also is hold it in the right way. Yep. If I hold it like that, then it looks like what we were just looking through with the image with the human figure inside of it. That if we add the right lines and the right extra perception from our extra dimensions from our perception, we transform the star tetrahedron into an octahedron. So now we're not losing or gaining energy, we're just rearranging it. I go from a pyramid that was shaped like this, and I change one of the bottoms of it and turn it around so that now it is shaped like this. This is what the Great Pyramid at Giza is shaped like. So you can tell it has a square bottom, not an equilateral triangle bottom, but we still have the same four faces. But now something amazing has happened, and you probably can't see it that effectively. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry, I'm trying to hold too many things. Let's see if I can hold this a little bit better. But this angle that is right beneath my nostrils is now a 90-degree angle. So we end up having this magical transformation of going from an object that is made only out of 60-degree angles into an object that now contains a 90-degree angle. And it also has this complementary bottom structure to it. And I'm trying to...
You're perfect. It's perfect.
Okay, good. Thank you. Yes, I know. I try to get all of my little models together. It's not working perfectly.
And I have a good question coming when you're ready.
Okay.
Well, you're manipulating a lot of planes here, so you're forgiven.
That's exactly right. So what we end up doing is transforming it into this octahedron. That is the ticket out of here. You go from a star tetrahedron to an octahedron, and it is a perceptual exercise. Just like if I drew a flat hexagon and then I drew the right lines and you looked at it as if it were a cube. Here, I'll do another very fast exercise of perception. Here is a hexagon. you look at it like a flat hexagon. But if I draw in these lines of perception, now you look at it like a cube.
Yep.
So in order to do dimensional travel, we need to go from that star tetrahedron to an octahedron and no longer look at the flower of life as if it lacks that extra lobe or plane. When we add that perception, we change on a cellular level.
Yeah.
The software changes the hardware. What do you got?
Okay, so here's my question. So you had that picture of the person sitting inside the Merkaba, and then you did all that stuff to sort of change it around to the octahedron. So I had a vision while dancing once that in our heads, in our third eye, that there is a small crystal that looks like that. And so the way you had it drawn is like the outer and the inner, because everything, there's always like the micro and the macro, the inner and the outer. And the whole answer to the way out of it is in here. It's all right here. It's within, it's completely within us. And that shape art, it's already there. And that's why they're so focused on degrading that part of our physical anatomy, is because that is the only way out is in, right? And so what you just described there and what you've been talking about this whole time is, and this is when I start communicating with whatever it is I'm communicating with, sometimes my future self, my highest self, and it passes all this information along. But when I ask a particular question, I only ever get one answer. And I've told this before on the show, so sorry to repeat myself, but it tells me that this is the sacred geometry of space, time, and sound. That's the answer. And what
I want to thank you, because you're saying all, you're like filling in all the blanks that I should be filling in because I'm going so fast. But that concept of that crystal at the center of your skull, let me bring up a picture while I'm talking. That is what emanates, or where all of this energy field emanates from, what generates it. Here, like, this is a pretty good picture of what it is, that we have this.
Yep.
Where I'm highlighting in red, that big dot that's in the middle there, that is where we have these higher psychic faculties, and that it is an organ of our actual physical body, and then it also creates an energy field that is non-physical. Just like my larynx is a physical organ, that if it's not operational, there is silence. If it's operational, I am vibrating the atmosphere, and if I die, clearly I don't vibrate the atmosphere anymore. So in understanding our higher faculties, you can dissect a brain and you can see, oh yeah, there are these little physical, you know, structures that are inside of there, but that if you die, you're not generating that energy field that is the actual field of awareness that is what's around us. And it is absolutely generated by that tiny, crystalline structure. So your pineal gland is much like a physical eyeball, but it does not have a cornea. So it has a retina and cells that can perceive light, but these are perceived from neurological or indirect stimulation. And it is our imaginations, our tiny inner movie screen. And it is, like I said, that expression that I was horrified by that humans use, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride, that totally devalues the functioning of the higher faculties. That tiny crystal, that's our crystal that we use to paint reality. Here, this is a paintbrush. That is like the paintbrush that we use to create reality with our perception. It's not worthless. It's worth everything. It's the most valuable thing that we have in our body. And it's also why these higher faculties are hijacked by those beings that don't have their own innate creative capacities, that they have blinded humanity and hijacked our own, like the raw dough that we use to make the cookies of the cosmos. They hijack the dough and then they make burnt cookies that we don't like to eat at all. So all of this flying rainbow lasagna teaching, this is all about how to become empowered so that we can keep our own mental dough, our raw materials, our fifth dimensional and higher waveforms, use the ovens in front of our eyes or our inner perception to coalesce it into a physical reality that we can experience and navigate that reality, and that we don't have to pray to an external God and say, oh God, please make this thing happen, that we are actually the creators or the divine miniature co-creators making this happen. And I just would like to characterize that I am not, here like to make fun of earth or earth religions or people that have a faith, not at all, but I am here to bring ideas of freedom, and that I find that most of the earth religions are control systems that are implanted as a long con game, like a centuries, a millennia old confidence game to make humanity worship their abusers as if they're actually gods, and not to take control of reality by using your own higher faculties. Flying Rainbow Lasagna, this is how we can be free. This is how we can get our freedom again. And if you ask me, why did I come here into this physical body? Like, I'm not here on vacation. It's not just a pleasure cruise. I am here for purposes of freedom, because there, I really perceived that there was this very unfair thing that was happening on this planet, and not just on this planet, but to the occupant of this body. Like, I got involved because I said, that's not fair. And I have, like, one of my cosmic personality characteristics is very much, you know, fighting for freedom. And I came into this body through this Flying Rainbow Lasagna oscillation because I said, I am going to do this. Like, I am going to fix this. And you don't fix it by waving your magic wand, you know, making it happen in some far distant reality. You fix it by participating. I think Pete Seeger, one of these old folk singers, he said that. He said, life doesn't get better because you check out. It gets better because you actually participate, you actually show up and actually do it. So that's my motivation, is why I'm here doing this.
Wow. Well, that was incredible. And I think this is a good time for us to take a little break. And when we come back, you can tell us a little bit about the person before you came in and the person now, and why you're doing this. And then we can get into your passions about the state of the world today, you know, how your passions about what's going on in the world today, and how we can use this to transform that. All right. Wonderful. I will have some music for us that relates, but I haven't picked it yet. So it will get picked and we will have music, and we'll be back on Off Planet TV in just a minute. All right.
So. Wonderful.
You are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
TV. The website is offplanetradio.com. And wow, that was a smoking first segment that we did. Our guest, Aurora, is with us. We're talking about the Flying Rainbow Lasagna. And I say that with a smile and a chuckle, not because it's funny, ha-ha, but it's funny in the cosmic sense that it brings together a lot of things we don't really communicate well, because we're still wrapped up in the monkey mind and semantics and science and all the physicality of it. This kind of liberates it and puts it into a whole different space. And Aurora and Emily, welcome back to the second segment.
Thank you.
All right. So why don't you just, let's get into, you know, whatever you want to tell us about where you're coming from, where you're going, and your experience.
Tell us where people can find you, too, by the way.
First of all, tell us that.
And how, because you have courses online, you have a YouTube channel, there's a lot of material out there. Let people know how they can access that.
Thank you so much. I totally appreciate that opportunity. So the best way to find all things lasagna is my website, which is flyingrainbowlasagna.com. And I spell lasagna with an E on the end. So if you go there, you can see, first of all, detailed close-up pictures and videos of my artwork. You can also easily contact me through all the Facebook and Twitter links and find my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is also called very creatively Flying Rainbow Lasagna. And I do a series of like a webinar series and formal presentations of these ideas. That's a class that I named Lessons for Full Spectrum Humans. So you can find the link to that from my website, or you can find it on Teachable, which is the platform where I have it. And so here's how I feel with all of this information. I like for it to be made as widely available as possible. I don't consider it proprietary, like it's not my secret personal stuff that I want to keep away from people. And this is my profession, and I do, you know, share these ideas professionally. So I have, some webinar things that are, on YouTube that are available for everyone. And then if you would like to fully be saturated and fully delve into the concepts, enroll in the Teachable class. And because I like to say, like, no one should be turned away from being able to have access to these ideas, you know, simply if they don't have enough money. So there's always a way to learn about lasagna, because I also like to say that this is like, we are giving birth to a baby. I'm not going to keep the secret to Lama's breathing technique so that you can't, like, we need to do the exercises. We're doing this. Like, let's all work together. So that is how I feel with this. So yes, Lessons for Full Spectrum Humans is the webinar series. You can find me on Facebook and on YouTube with that. I have a Patreon account also that is for sustaining the work. And the best place to find all things lasagna is flyingrainbowlasagna.com. Thank you for letting me get that out there. And you know what, if I just drink a little bit of water, I would like to begin by talking about, most people usually ask what, you know, the process of walking in, why it happened, and why I am here instead of the previous occupant. And I think that is a very good segue into the concept of what is going on Earth's surface right now, and all of this relates to the genetic degradation. So the previous occupant of this body was not a bad or wrong or evil person at all. They were attacked by Satan. And when I say Satan, I am not speaking merely about biblical literalism. I'm referring to an actual space race, an actual group of non-terrestrial beings that use technology. Because if I were to describe loosely how consciousness is arranged in the cosmos, there are beings that use technology and beings that don't have to use technology. And the ones that don't have to use technology, they are much more like, you and I, but we are in our domesticated formats right now. But if you don't have to use technology, everything that you need, you derive from your connection to the stars, the stellar network, pure consciousness, pure energy. It is not necessary to have artifice. And the basic galactic backstory is that a very, very ancient, long time ago, there were beings that emanated themselves from the source, that central convergence point, but not on a bridge of love. So they did not come into organic multicellular containers like you and I are currently using. They emanated themselves into technology, like a cyborg or a server or something like that. This was the invention of technology, and that decision has been coloring and shaping our experience. We are not the only planet to be infected or infested or affected by technology. This is a mining operation, the way that humans go around to a place that is rich in mineral ore, and they mine it, and they take out what is special. Randy's totally with me on this. That our
so am I.
Planet Earth is just the most recent planet. It also happened on Mars, and it also happened on Venus, and it happened on what is presently the asteroid belt, but that it used to be a planet either known as Malduk or Mardek, depending upon which culture we're getting the etymology from. But it once was a planet, and it was vibrated out of existence due to the power struggle between the various factions of non-terrestrial beings that use technology. This is why I'm bringing this up, so that you understand that terrestrial technology, like I'm pointing to my light bulb right now or my iPad, this functions through electrons flowing in a wire. Non-terrestrial technology is more ancient than human culture on Earth, like if we define human culture as the past 10 or 6,000 years, and it runs on trapped and victimized consciousness. It runs on distortion of the DNA time field. So if this yellow sculpture is a representation of the living time field, I have to say that over and over, that this is not a dead or inert thing, that this is a living thing that has a metabolism, just like we have a metabolism and we have to have blood that flows through us that keeps our body alive and oxygen that flows through us. The time field is an alive being, and the flow of time is part of its metabolism. And blockages in the flow of time or consciousness through, you know, the membranes of time are analogous to blockages within our own circulatory system, like fatty deposits that block up your heart and make it so that your energy cannot flow properly. And what happened was beings who didn't have organic biological cellular containers had their technological containers destroyed, and they didn't have a way to get back to the central convergence point. And they have been occupiers of the interstices. They've been stuck on the membranes for a very long amount of time, longer than what is known as recorded human history. These are, I jokingly refer to them as the turds that refuse to be flushed. Like, they just keep circling the bowl, keep circling. So part of this has to do with going into a black hole, that if you could think of each one of these vortices as a black hole. So science describes, if you were a person being sucked into a black hole, you would literally undergo, their word for it is spaghettification, which is funny because I know lasagna and pasta and the spaghetti monster. I'm not affiliated with the spaghetti monster. But science describes, imagine if you were to be drawn out from your feet into a very, very long, skinny piece of energy and sucked into the center of a black hole, that's spaghettification. And if you don't actually make it into the center of the black hole, you get smeared around the edge, around the event horizon. And this is like analogous to what happened to these consciousnesses that lost their containers for the physical realm and didn't have a way to get back. They're circling around the event horizon. And the membrane between worlds is supposed to be, first of all, a place that is a totally cold, frozen place of non-movement. It's not supposed to have energy there. And what they have done is hijacked or siphoned off energy into that realm as their compensatory mode. What I am describing is the technology that distorts the time field, the satanic technology. This is what I'm trying to say. What is known as dark magic on the surface of Earth. This is a distortion or a hijacking of the time field. And this also goes back to ritual sacrifice when religions were first created, like Judeo-Christianity. And I'm going to be equally offensive to everyone, like both Jews and Christians, that the idea is that these are not systems of worship or respect for abstract consciousness, that these are ways of harvesting energy from the living areas of the time field and putting it onto the membrane of death in order to create blockages that are like the impediment that are what these interdimensional beings feed off of. They can't feed off of love if love is a tone, a musical tone, and they can't feed off of this high energy up here. So what they do is they degrade that energy. They bring it down into muddier, lower tones and slow it down. And as it gets slowed down, it gets turned into emotions that are like hatred, anger, grief, sorrow, and even, sorry to say it, the romantic emotions of what we consider like attraction, revulsion, that most of what is going on in romantic partnership is food for the occupiers of the interstices. And if I can characterize this, in the time before the human genome was degraded, death did not exist. No one had a timeline that ended on the membrane of death. Everybody's timeline went back to the source. So when these beings invaded our planet, it was the ultimate traumatic experience. No one here had ever died. No one here had ever experienced death. And instantaneously, about one third of the population, like a very large portion of the population, instantaneously died. And to see, instead of the ascension process happening, ascension would be when you change state without the intervening experience of death. So I'm making the distinction here. You have something to say, Emily.
So I have a question. So you just said that instantly a third of people experience death, and then wouldn't the rest of them all then have the fear of death? So you have the death, and then everyone else afraid of death, with which ultimately, obviously,
yeah, it's
death.
Another mass trauma death. Event, is what it is. And it's the same cycle. Yeah,
and it brings the experience to you, right? The fear of death, fear of disease, fear of being left, and whatever brings that experience to you.
You absolutely understand it. Like earlier this year in January, my beloved kitty cat, Miss Ashley, was horribly attacked by another cat and she died. And it's not just that they die, it's that you see their dead body, you see them going from their beautiful, alive, healthy face to their not healthy, not alive. And then if you didn't bury them, you'd see them decompose and be eaten by worms and maggots. That is horrifying when we think of people that we love degrading and being devolved like that. So that was the original primary trauma that happened on our planet. And it was also a huge degradation in levels of consciousness and awareness. And the people that were left behind, the survivors, also had to deal with the invaders that came inside of your own genome. And this is like, if you could imagine, we all have this, but the interior struggle between who you are as a core person, like that central core persona, and the intrusive thoughts, the thought invaders. I often call it the peanut gallery. Like you're trying to live your life. You're trying to do whatever it is you do. If it's dance or art or music or whatever it is, and you're trying to focus on it, and that there's these peanut gallery that are trying to distract you from whatever you're doing. Or, you know, even if it's just something simple, like you're trying to walk down your front steps in the morning, holding your cup of coffee to go out to the mailbox. And those are the beings that try to distract you and make you trip or fall over your bathrobe or whatever, that send you into misadventures, that those are demonic occupiers of the interstices. And the reason why they wish to send you and me, the occupiers, the living people, why they wish to send us into misadventures is because we are like, they are farming us. We are like their energetic investment. These are scavengers that have turned into farmers. So just like in the stock market, somebody makes an investment. I invest $10 and I want to get back $10,000. These demonic occupiers of the interstices make an energetic investment. If the bicycle wheels of your chakras are turning at a nice rate like this, they put like a stick, a twig into that wheel so that your wheel spins not as well and begins to go all over the place. Yeah. And then they siphon off that energy. And that energy, it might feel like joy is leaving you. Because sometimes when I'm playing the piano, I'm like, I'm sounding good. And then one of these intrusive thoughts comes in. It's like, you're not playing well at all. And your pinky just made the wrong note. And then it takes away my joy or whatever it is. We are all familiar with the joy stealers, especially when you're trying to be creative or when you're trying to have an orgasm or whatever it is. Your energy is rising up and these joy stealers siphon off the joy. Those are the beings that occupy the interstices. And they do that because they literally don't have mouths to eat love. They don't run the operating system known as love. They hate and revile you and I because we have love. So these beings made a choice a long, long time ago to go away from the source, not on a bridge of love. They are severely regretting their choice because they are now at this moment stuck on the surface, on these membranes without any gas. They can't go any further. So what they did was they created this compensatory mode that is called technology, that is I define as satanic technology. It is dark magic. Arthur C. Clarke once defined magic as any sophisticated form of technology that you simply don't know how it works. That's what magic is. And so now I'm going to...
And then they've embodied themselves as fractional reserve bankers as well, right?
That's exactly right. You're so perceptive because these beings, like the original rapists that raped our planet, they set up all of these control structures. They set up society. They set up agriculture. They set up society. They set up money. And they set up banking. And they certainly set up the idea of banking and interest. And they set all of this up as a control system. Our economy mirrors the economy of hell. And this membrane between worlds, we could define it as hell. So when you go into hell, you are like in the entry level position in the mail room. You got your, first job and you are at the lower end of the totem pole. And then in hell, the way that you work yourself up is you rape and harm people that are embodied, like you and I, through intrusive thoughts, the peanut gallery, stealing energy from them. So the practice of dark magic and satanic ritual abuse, this is a formalized, in the way that music is formalized, sound structure, this is a formalized method for harvesting energy. And it goes, it's not just one religion. This goes back to worship of ancient gods. Basically, humanity has never been worshiping the true God. Any God that requires any animal or human sacrifice or energy sacrifice is not the true God, because God is this presence of everything that has all of the energy that it could possibly need. Why does it need you to kill a dove or kill an oxen? As Jehovah, the God of what is defined as the Israelites, said, build me a big fat temple, take your sheep and your goats and your doves and your oxen and sacrifice them to me at the temple. And that's not what a true divinity being would say. That being that wanted sacrifices wanted to put more energy into the fatty deposits of the cosmos there. So this all goes back to Aurora. Why are you here instead of the original occupant of this body? Because the original occupant of this body was a good person that was essentially created in, you know, in their family as a satanic sacrifice. And I know it's like a dark topic, and it is, it's like, it's also very personal. It's hard to talk about. And there are things that I haven't completely worked out with the biological family. So I also would like to be very respectful and not, because I like to do this for healing. I don't really want to do this to push people's buttons and create more perturbations and more trauma. So this is really all about how we can all be healed. And healing, it comes from, we'll get into it, the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, but what they were trying to do, what these users of satanic technology were trying to do, was to remove or burn out the previous ego structure in this body and put their own convenient implant into this body. And I was a very naughty sacrifice, and I said, no, I'm not going to allow this to happen. And instead, I vibrated the Flying Rainbow Lasagna into this DNA structure. And I use the analogy, it's like, you know, a truck full of pigs or cows that are going off to the slaughterhouse, and one of them is ornery and is like, no, I'm going to jump off the truck and I'm going to run down the street. And then you end up actually going to like an animal sanctuary in Woodstock, New York, and you don't have to be eaten by someone. So that is what I did in that moment, where basically there was the option of either dying or becoming completely evil, like completely swamped or programmed with evil and darkness. Instead of those two options, I created a new option. And the option is the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, this oscillation or genetic maneuver that allowed DNA to be rearranged into a new structure. It allowed for a new level of consciousness to come into this physical body. And it made it so that this body didn't have to die. So that what, I mean, it was a, I can't speak about it like in a linear sense, like first this happened, then this happened, then this happened, because that was not what the experience was like. It was very all at once. But I'll tell you that in the moment that I created the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, and it was also part of a giant cosmic battle, that this, it wasn't like, some people have told me their stories of being a walk-in, and it's a beautiful, peaceful story, that it's like when some people are born, it's like in a jacuzzi and there's nice music and aromatherapy. That's not what my birth was like. My birth was like in the middle of the Lincoln Tunnel with a lot of horns honking and everything was not okay. And the birth process was the process of creating this transcendent object that allowed this physical body not to die and allowed me to jump up and over those obstacles that were trying to prevent me from connecting directly to divinity. So I connected to God. I didn't have that blockade blocking me out from God. And so I also made a very clear choice in that moment to come into a physical body in order to share it with others, that it wasn't okay. It wasn't enough for me to just, once you have an idea is like, it's like free range. It you can't unmake an idea. So I knew that once I had the idea, that the solution was available to everyone. But I really felt like a sense of personal responsibility that I wanted to come into this level of reality and share this idea with others and to use my physical body as a template. Like, that is the only thing. When you make a real magic spell, that is how you do it. You use your own body. When you do a real like science experiment, you use your own body as the, you know, petri dish or laboratory for the experiment. So that is what I did. And that is how this body didn't die. And I'll tell you that the first couple of years of me being in this physical structure, I was not fully integrated. I was like a hand that was not fully in the glove that I was in. And it took many years for me to do that. And I don't talk all about my, you know, personal trajectory, but I was very neurologically disarranged. I was numerically illiterate. I wasn't articulate as I present am. Like, I was not like the format of who I presently am right now. So I can also tell you that Flying Rainbow Lasagna is a beacon of hope, a way that one can transcend inner levels of difficulty. Like, that this body was meant to be like a vegetable, that they were trying to destroy the neurology of this body so that I would never be able to speak or think or effectively communicate with others. And clearly I've transcended that. So I don't just bring that up or bring up any of these things just for you know, self-aggrandizement. I bring it up as a sense of hope that if anybody has had a brain injury or neurological problem or trauma or disease or anything, broken bone, that it is possible to experience profound healing. And it is through reweaving the time field, changing what is going on in the time field. So I know all of that is a lot of heavy backstory, but that can help you to understand why I am so personally connected to the idea of revealing Pizzagate or Pedogate or whatever is the, you know, whatever we're using as the descriptive term for this, that these original rapists of the planet set up the social, cultural, religious, and banking or, you know, monetary systems, and that they have been requiring sacrifices, not just animal sacrifices, but human sacrifices and victimization in the form of rape and sexual abuse in order to keep the entire virtual reality machine going. Like, this is blah, 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 blah. If there's one thing that I can, you know, help to make clear, it's the idea that if you see a giant technological mothership, like a clank, clank metal spaceship flying through the sky, please do not be unduly impressed, because the gas that makes that ship go is literally babies being raped and, you know, innocent people being victimized and harmed and killed. That it is the siphoning off of that energy that is supposed to be going up towards the center, but instead is diverted towards the side. It is a distortion of the genetic code and the time field in its behavior and stance and the way that it's supposed to be dancing. That is what makes these sophisticated, larger technological structures function. So don't be so impressed. It's like if I took a Yanomami Indian from the Brazilian Amazon and they'd never been to Times Square, and if I stuck them in the middle of Times Square but they didn't know about the petroleum industry, they'd be like, wow, this is a lot of stuff. I'm very impressed. Then if you told them about the petroleum industry and the amount of environmental degradation and the unfairness of our economy based upon that, then they would be less impressed. So if you are looking at space races and you're like, ooh, that's a sophisticated space race because they've got a big fat mothership, or they can fly a moon into a new orbit or do whatever in order to transform reality, don't be too impressed when you actually find out that all of that is based upon trapped and victimized or hijacked consciousness, and that that is literally distorting the DNA time field. Just like if you took embroidery, if you cut the threads, if you cut enough threads, the whole thing starts to unravel. So this affects you and me. There's no way for me to be a happy person on an interdimensional cloud living in pure freedom while these degradations are happening at this level. This is my motivation for why I would intervene and why I would do this, because if there's lack of freedom at this level, there's lack of freedom everywhere. And I don't know if Randy has a question or something that you'd like to, I feel like you're leaning forward like you wanted to speak. Because I get going, and if you don't press pause, then I will just keep going.
No, that's okay. I was just going to interject here because you were talking about that. I remember when the Deepwater Horizon oil spill occurred in the Gulf of Mexico. What was that, 2010? I got a vision of how destructive the system was by understanding that this Deep Horizon platform, which had penetrated far deeper into the Earth's crust than wells are supposed to anyway. It was completely illegal. But I had a vision of the Earth's blood as the fuel for this system. And I actually it was almost like a vision. It was like a flash vision. And in that moment, I came to understand that as kind of the context for what you just said.
Yeah.
Which is the blood of the innocent, which is really all of us who are living beings being sapped constantly to feed a parasitic vampiric system.
The visual that you guys both just created reminds me exactly of that painting that I have from Sean Gautreau that's called Archon Oil Rig. Aurora, I don't know if you know who Sean Gautreau is. Do you know who he is? He documents...
No, but it sounds beautiful.
He documents the cloud cloaked craft in the sky.
He's an artist also.
He's also an artist.
Yeah.
And I got a painting from him that shows the Deepwater Horizon platform in the water, and then you could also see a small version of it reflected in the sky, and around it are all of these kinds of craft these plasma craft, these stuff that we're not sure if they're from another race or if they're a military industrial complex, which is also another kind of race, you know, and they're all around there as if they're sucking up the fumes from what's going on below. So that you guys just created that vision with your words, and someone created that as a painting.
That was a frequency.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
The 800,000 children that go missing just from our country each year, it's kind of a rough number. That is like the tax that has to be paid to this overarching system for us to have this country, this economy, this level of military industrial power, everything about it, and also all of the wars on top of that, and also all of the cancer on top of that. I don't know if everyone understands that when people develop the disease cancer, it's like their body is literally being sacrificed or eaten by a parasitic space race. And when we begin to understand this, it's a very dark view of our world. Like, I understand it can be intimidating, it can be depressing, like it makes my shoulders go down but there is hope because of Flying Rainbow Lasagna. So I will never describe in excruciating detail all the challenges that we're facing without giving you effective tools for how we can fix this. But knowing the adversary or knowing the context that we are in is essential. Like, not to be, falsely, ignorant of what we are facing. But it's a war of consciousness. So I'm also going to give you a lot of hope, because none of this is about your salvation requires technology or money or anything that is like the objective materialist resource world. That everything that we need in order to get to freedom is basically what we were born with: your birthday suit and your sense of connection to the divine, your inner spirit, your consciousness, energy. Of course, we need food and sunlight. But what I'm trying to say is that we really are in an underdog situation where the people that own all of the money and control society and control the structure are really the invaders. And our planet was invaded a very long time ago. And what we're doing right now is the freedom battle in order to try to get those invaders out of our individual bodies and off of the planet. And we don't fight with guns. Even though I am definitely a freedom fighter, the battle that we do is not a physical battle.
Agreed.
Yeah. It's all about consciousness and energy. And like, your dance is a battle. Emily, when you are dancing,
that is how you do spiritual warfare. That's with sound and motion. That's how you do spiritual warfare.
Have you seen, do you know what capoeira is, Aurora?
It's from Brazil.
It's a Brazilian martial art that is disguised as a dance.
So
you fight with, there's been nights where I feel like I'm just conducting spiritual warfare all night long on the dance floor. Then there's also nights where it feels very heavenly on the, and not the false heaven, but the heaven inside of you kind of thing on the dance floor. So I totally down with that. I have a question. Is this the kind of thing, I love this 2017 because all of us that were sort of walled off from each other before, like you and I and like you and Randy, we're now starting to have these conversations and we're bridging these gaps. And some of these concepts are still a lot for the average person. For my
sister, we actually spoke this into existence at the beginning of the year, so we're not really surprised.
Good. So, but for some people, this is still a difficult concept to explain. Like, I have some friends that I could explain this to and they'll mostly get it. Others that would sort of get it. And then some that won't get it at all. Is the way that we share the Flying Rainbow Lasagna to do that with the people who can get it. But even if just enough of us start doing it, will it become like a 100th monkey kind of thing?
I'm so happy you brought up 100th monkey. That is exactly this concept put into practice. Even if I never flapped my moving mouth parts or did a video or overtly told anyone about the Flying Rainbow Lasagna, eventually all of us would be doing this because we are all affecting one another on a genetic level. So we're submerged in this big symphony of music. If you've ever seen that little science experiment where you have many, many metronomes, but they're not synchronized. It's a field of metronomes and they're sitting on a table, and eventually they become synchronized because the table is the commonality and they're transferring energy. The ones that are going faster let off a little bit of energy, and the ones that are going slower get a little bit of energy. This is the ethics of interdimensional, we're in this symphony, we're affecting one another. So if it's just like a choir, if we're all in a musical choir together and one person is singing an A and they're singing the right note, then everybody tends to calibrate properly to that note. But of course, if the loud singer is a horrible singer and they're singing an A like this, then that will also be what we are calibrating towards. So it's absolutely appropriate for the people that are, let's say, musically literate. This pattern that we're looking at, this is the musical score of the cosmos. And if you're musically literate and you can play the right note, then you should play your note with confidence. And this is what, like, as we are beginning to collaborate and share these ideas, our music is amplified and gets stronger. Because I also like to say there are a lot of, you know, usually I'm all about individuality and everything, but there's a lot of punk rock anarchists in the band, and they're making music like this. And it sounds horrible. And those are like the people that are doing the deep water horizon drilling and other things like that. And they have a lot of money and a lot of resources. And they feel like they're very powerful, but we can be much more powerful with the strength of our song.
So it's like the Black Bloc anarchists that are throwing Molotov cocktails, where we want to be the peaceful anarchists, the voluntarists, a la Derek Bros, from Conscious Resistance, and vibrate that kind of anarchy into existence as opposed to one that is throwing Molotov cocktails.
You totally got it. The Antifa with the Molotov cocktails, they are just more serving the demiurge. They are serving the death cult. They are not working towards harmonic integration. That's what life is. Life is this unlikely thing that happens when all the cells of our body play beautiful music together. And when imagine if all of the human cells of the body of the planet played beautiful music together, we'd have a completely different society with no Molotov cocktails necessary.
You know who Derek Bros is? From the Conscious
Resistance? I don't know his work.
So check him out. We've interviewed him here. We'll have him back again sometime soon, hopefully. And his website is The Conscious Resistance. And he also is working on these things called Freedom Cells. Which is, it's a different take on the same word, but wordplay is so much of this. We have to explore every concept of this language that we're developing to better communicate with each other. And yes. You'd really like him. Check him out. Yeah.
With words, we can take this hacked language system and we can use it for our freedom. So that's a big part of it. Just like taking social media that was intended for our oppression and instead utilizing it to share ideas of uplift and all of that. All the things that are intended to bring us down, we can use as tools for our upliftment. And also, let me say this in terms of hope. We have the capacity to innovate, to make something new, that our oppressors, those occupiers of the interstices, think of them as artificial intelligence or technology users or like computer systems or algorithms that don't have this creative capacity that you and I have. Unpredictability, the capacity to think of something new, to make a new dance or a new. Yeah. You're with me, Randy.
Being unpredictable is absolutely what they don't want. That's why we have systems and conformity and all of this elaborate goose-stepping that people do inside the system. I want to get to this. Time is running so fast, so fast, so fast. So I've heard you say that death is neither natural nor inevitable. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. I say all the time that death is like an aberration, a thing that should not exist, a socially aberrant behavior, that this membrane of death is meant to be like the boundary that says when we're not supposed to go into that zone. Like if you ever played that child's game Operation and you're trying to use the tweezers to get the little bone out of someone's, and if the tweezers hit the edge, then it goes, eh. Death is supposed to be like that buzzer that is buzzing in the game of Operation and saying, eh, you hit the membrane of death, you did the wrong thing. But the challenge is that we have been programmed into a sense of the inevitability and necessity of it, and even glorification of death. So this is what I call the human religions that are the death cult, that essentially say that the way to transcend the present level of suffering is to die, and then you somehow get to live forever. And I'll say it super fast, because those religions that are the death cult are outgrowths of and reactions to the ancient Egyptian funerary religion that was all about achieving immortality through an actual type of technology. And that technology had to be created after death was invented. So we all used to be immortal. We all used to do nothing but return to the source and have unbroken continuity of consciousness. When death as the primary trauma was created, the very ancient Egyptians of the pharaonic Egypt invented mummification and these incantations that would create a type of immortality in the experiencer. And the people that eventually became the outgrowths, the Jews, the Israelites, they rejected that world and they became controlled by this AI, Jehovah. I have a whole teaching all about this. And I'm doing this super fast. I'm talking very, very fast. Invented the idea of heaven and hell. That was the invention of harvesting, the afterlife. And when you go to heaven and hell, you don't go back to this original source. You go to the interstices. This is the narrative fiction of heaven and hell. If you're a bad person, you go to hell. And if you're a good person, you go to the realm that is ruled over by, I call him, false astral Jesus. This is not the actual historical teacher that was here. It's a construct.
Right. Yeah.
You're with me.
We've called this the cosmological spin cycle because basically you are shot out violently. And then oddly enough, after this sort of what they call the Bardot, we're dropped back in again, but we have no memory left. So we have the memory wipe cycle, which means we do these repetitive cycles of birth, death, and we learn nothing cumulative as a result of it.
That we learn, we have difficulty learning, and we also create tons of fat, like extra gristle around the edges for these occupiers of the interstices to eat.
Yeah.
They're eating all of those peripheral suffering. And this idea of Jesus Christ, I'm not offending anyone about their religion, and Christ consciousness is a very real, very abstract network.
Yes, absolutely.
There are total illogicalities of the Christian dogma that states that you have to die in order to live forever. That's like saying you have to hit this membrane of death in order to not hit this membrane of death. That's an illogic. It doesn't work for me. So I really like this as a map. What I draw, these pictures and sculptures, these are like a visual map to a landscape so that we can tell where are we in time? How can we navigate time? And I really don't think that it is effective to say, oh, we're going to die, and then somehow through a mental program go into a different realm. What we're really doing is being hijacked into a fake virtual reality fantasy land that is not true heaven at all.
No, well, and most of the people who hear this show and know my background know that I came from that world. I was a Christian minister at one time. And I finally got to the place where I realized it was literally a death cult. And so, we're all kind of peeling layers off. It's not religiously offensive. You just have to go and look at what they're actually teaching and rediscover sense of life, what life really is, and how this arc demon demanded something from us that it had no right to. It created us in the image of itself, supposedly, and yet it demanded that we degrade ourselves in order to receive from it. That's wrong. So just as a caveat for people out there who hear this, who don't understand how we're coming at this.
So I'm with you on that.
Good.
So I have a question for both of you, actually. So I was raised without religion. So I don't have some of that built in stuff, but I've been here experiencing life in this world where lots of people have religious beliefs, and we have created all of these other death cults that are like a different, like the scientism death cult. And even there's certain aspects of our pop culture and pop music that are death cults. So I had come into a place where I was destroying myself and finding some level of sick romance in that, and I really had walked myself through as close to the membrane as I could have. And something pulled me back. And the first thing that I really started doing was taking care of my body in a different way with what I was eating and how I was caring for myself that way. And that started to change everything for me and brought me to the point where I'm at now. And people sometimes ask me why I'm so strict with my diet, why I'm so, insistent on the level of exercise and personal care that I do and whatnot. And I say to them, and I think they think I'm joking, and I say it with humor, but I'm actually not, is that I have to live forever so that I can save the world. And is that, I think that's what we're talking about. Like, I really feel like we are at this place. I don't want to die. I you know what I mean? Like, even when life is hard, I don't want to die. And I feel like what you say is exactly right, that we've been tricked into this thing of thinking we have to age and fall apart and die and whatever. And I'm not talking about being one of those people who like refuses to age in any kind of grace. But if you take care of this instrument, aging can mean just transforming into something else, wiser, more experienced, that has to do things a little differently. But I don't think we're supposed to die. Certainly, and if it's certainly not in the kind of time span that we've been given. Like, I think that we can live. I mean, I'm going to sound crazy saying this, but I do think that we're moving into a time where we're going to figure out, not with technology. I think they're going to try and trick us into uploading our consciousness to live forever. And that's a trick. And I think they're going to make us feel like everyone else is going to live forever. Not, but you guys are not going to take the chip or the this or the whatever. So you're not going to. And we just have to go, okay, you go do that. If that's what you want to do, you go do it. And we just have to keep dancing like a flying rainbow lasagna. And our trajectory will be infinite in both directions.
I'm totally with you.
All directions.
On that. The idea of being uploaded to like the false Christian heaven, like a virtual reality fantasy land, that is not appealing to me because it's a dumbing down of the complexity.
Totally.
So in the same way that analog music has a lot more subtleties in the recording than an MP3, which the
Thank
MP3
you.
Is shaped
yes.
like someone described.
We've been talking about it.
So like,
we've been talking about it a lot lately.
I'm a complete freak on analog music. Yeah.
And in our bodies, like a photon has a history. It's not just the photon that comes from the sun and then comes to us. It's a photon that's had a whole journey. So that is part of the analog extra information that gets dumbed down if we get uploaded into a virtual reality. How about water? Every water molecule that's inside of us has a history.
Yeah.
It's been in other people, in other organisms. It affects us, and it's part of the multi-dimensional, like multi-layered through time experience that we're having. I'm having some bleed through on my headphones. Is anyone else having that?
No? I heard.
Okay,
you.
Sorry.
There was a weird noise. It's gone. I don't know what it was. Yeah.
Sorry. That was actually
it.
My phone.
But,
sorry.
No.
That's all right. If we upload ourselves into some kind of digital virtual reality, what we get is a patina, a veneer that is not the true complexity of all of our molecular and energy. Entanglements over time. It's not desirable at all.
Do we get the flat sacred geometry? The six petals
yes.
instead of the eight?
You totally got it. That's what they're preparing everyone for. That's what even the the world flag that I think they're showing for NASA is like the flower of life. It is saying humans like stay dumbed down. And it's also this sense of I've used the expression that humans right now are like dogs instead of like wolves. Humans are in the domesticated format, and dogs have been genetically manipulated to love and adore their masters, and to feel like if they weren't on a leash, they'd be so confused and they wouldn't know where to go or what to do. But that's what humans have been taught in terms of religion. Like, if you don't have a god telling you what to do or creating your life.
Well, a dog is just the mirror image of a god. That's what the god is. God, dog, mirror image.
I don't know. Dogs are better. I don't know. Dogs are better.
But we shouldn't have to ask we shouldn't adore and idolize our master that genetically degraded us. And we shouldn't feel so uncomfortable if we don't have an external authority figure making our life for us, like creating our destiny or creating our future timeline, the way that people imagine God, a man in the sky with a beard, that makes your life for you. And then if you want something to change, you have to pray, please, man with beard, please change my life for me. That is the domesticated human format. But what we're actually supposed to be is empowered individuals where we are painting our own reality, and we understand that we don't have to have our minds on a leash where someone else controls and dictates our behavior, and where we can create our own reality. We paint our own reality. I've got my paintbrush here, and that is the freedom to create your own body, your own cellular structure, your own series of events. And I really believe, if you want to say, like, how come we aren't all happy already? Because we have to work together, like many plants and organisms work together in a metal to create an ecosystem. We're not just one blade of grass on our own. We're many different plants and organisms working together. So we have to get rid of this idea of capitalism at any expense, that that is killing the planet. It is insanity. You know, the idea that one person is allowed to dig up and commodify a particular resource at great expense to everyone else, and then this is insanity. This is why we have such bad symptoms on our planet. We're not all integrating and playing this beautiful music together. So we need to change cultural values and what we consider to be acceptable. In our present cultural values, it's not he who is the strongest, barbarian values, the strong survive and the victor get the spoils. We still have barbarian values, but these are applied with capitalism. If you have a lot of money, it's the equivalent of having big muscles. If you have a lot of money, you can do whatever the F you want and boss everyone else around. But it used to be a long time ago, if you had big muscles, then you could be the bully and boss everyone else around. And this is all a reflection of the value system of the occupiers and the interstices, that our society was built by them, and we are living out their values. Time and their demonic values, even though I usually call them occupiers of the interstices because demonic is such a loaded word. We need to culturally evaluate our values and have a different set of values about what is the right way to act towards one another and the planet.
Well, I think part of that equation has to do as well with the fact that we've been entrained into a system that told us there are limited resources, there's limited time, limited dimensions. In other words, all of these limitations have been superimposed on us to enclose us in a box, thus creating a competitive system because, well, there's only so much bacon on the table. Pardon the pork analogy, but basically what they're saying is you're going to have to scramble for this. In other words, more loose harvesting because now they've got you scrambling. You know, it's like going to a great big football game with billions of people scrambling around, all running after the same ball all the time in an endless loop.
You got it. And that reflects them, the demons of the interstices, trying to run after humans like the football in order to harvest energy off of us. So everything changes. When one begins to flying rainbow lasagna, one's DNA, you're no longer a loose harvest for them.
You're holding those forms in front of us right now. Those forms are free-flowing. They're a conduit for a flow of energy that's inexhaustible, that's basically throwing off, going over unity, not creating a shunt where energy is cut off or drained off.
That's a beautiful point.
Yeah.
If you look at those forms, that's what I see. I see the free flow of something that is constantly increasing its energy flow.
These are frictionless perpetual motion machines.
Yes.
So, and this is, it's actually what's inside of us. It's what's inside of the undecaying spin of the electron. And I like to say, verbalized conscious thought, that is friction in the machine. So when we sit in meditation, when we are in silence or when we're in bliss, like when I'm doing my painting or if I'm like really into a song on my piano or whatever, I'm in bliss. I'm not thinking. I don't have that friction inside of my mind that is slowing things down. So I would say that each one of us, we should look for the optimum functioning of our interior mental system. You know that you're functioning at optimum levels when you don't have an internal dialogue. Like if you're running, you know, you're running on the road and you're just totally in your groove, or music helps me to do this quite a lot, you know, playing music on my headphones, or basically not being bored, being engaged at optimum levels with a task that you really love, and you'll find you don't have an internal dialogue. You don't have to think, move your pinky, pick up your thumb, get the red paintbrush. You're just doing your thing.
Absolutely. Wow.
And I'd like to actually say one more thing, because I don't know if I have described it enough, but the flying rainbow lasagna, this is actually like a visualization and meditation and a thing that you do, not just something that we talk about. So like music theory, this is talking about what's an A sharp or what's a C flat or whatever, but that's not actually playing or experiencing music. So doing the flying rainbow lasagna as a as a verb is its whole own thing. And I combine it with sun gazing. That is where I get the energy or the gas to make my car go. And that this is an oscillation maneuver that I am doing with myself and the singularity that is within myself and the singularity that is within anything else. Like it could be the sun or the stellar network, or it could be an atom or a cell in someone else's body, or it could be a concept. But I wanted to quickly bring up the idea that this is a dance maneuver, mm-hmm. a thing, an embodiment that you're doing, not just a concept.
Is it? It's that dance move you do when you're totally in your zone and nobody is watching, and you just feel like it feels good, and you just want to keep doing that forever, right? That's what it is.
And when you described your capacity to dance from Saturday night to Monday morning, that is what this is like, because it brings us into our higher dimensional state. When mm-hmm. we're connected to the divine, I mean, we can literally transcend the need for physical food. If we restructure our bodies, we can return. That's our original intended state. We don't have to kill another person, another animal or plant, and put it in our mouth and, you know, ferment it in the cauldron of our belly. And imagine how profoundly our world economy would change if we no longer had to eat physical food. We would no longer have agriculture. We would no longer have, you know, domesticated animals. All of these things would change. And then we would be more about sharing and selling ideas as a commodity. And this is my remembrance of what the sophisticated antediluvian worldwide culture was like before the fall, before our genetic change.
Absolutely. Wow. You did a great job describing
that.
This
has
been
really
incredible.
Do we have anything else? Because I think that's actually a great wrap-up right there.
Yeah, it's a great wrap-up. So do you have anything else you want to say, Randy, or if not, I'll close out tonight.
I don't, but I want to say thank you, Aurora, for coming on and sharing your art, your sound, the resonance of your voice, the vibration, and giving us another tool that we can begin to launch out onto. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And on that
happy
note,
to do it.
Yeah, and on that note, guys, the truth is out there. It's inside of you. Dance like no one's watching. Dance like the flying rainbow was on you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Stand the line for a second. All right.
This is Off Planet Radio.